Michelle, thanks so much. And when you say change is a scary word, I will tell you there are a whole bunch of people that share that thinking, and it can be a scary word, and hopefully I can take a little of the fear and turn that into excitement, because for me, change is something that I live for every day. You know, I'm sort of a growth junkie, and if anybody on this call was in Phoenix, I think the one takeaway that everybody got was we're a culture that is in transformation, that is going through change. And I kind of wanted to start the call off before I got into this to pass on a word from Jeff. Jeff Roberti was originally doing this call. Unfortunately, he's dealing with a really tough family situation. I don't want to get into it, but I will tell you, please keep him and his family in your prayers. You know, we're hoping for the best in the situation they're dealing with. And Jeff will be back on another call. Nobody can replace Jeff, but I will certainly do my best tonight to help you guys understand what's going on and with the change. So on that note, the sad part out of my voice, change. So why did I want to talk about change? Well, I started noticing going into, you know, obviously with the UK stuff, and we started this series of calls before Phoenix, and we did four calls, and I looked at the analytics on our website, because we have them as MP3s, and I'd gotten the analytics from Jamie. And these four calls now have had close to 12,000 people that have listened to these four calls. And these calls were about change. And what it really was a testament to was how much our culture wants change right now. The reason people are listening, the reason people are taking notes, the reason people were excited about the conference and going to Phoenix and what they saw is because they saw change. And immediately after the conference, something happened to me that has never happened to me before, and I've been to over 50 conferences. And that was that I got absolutely inundated by the leaders that reaching out to me saying, I get what you're saying. I listen to the calls. I've heard the lessons. I'm just not sure what to do next. So I thought it would be worthwhile to maybe share a little bit about what I think you need to do next. You know, what lessons we've learned, what you can apply to this. You know, going into this, you have to understand, and so few people do, that change is a process, not an event. You know, sometimes people struggle with change because they want it to happen in the moment, and they're so used to having an answer for something, and so instantaneously, and change doesn't work that way. You know, if there's one lesson I've learned as somebody that's always trying to change things, is a process that never ends. So when I talk about change, I talk about three things, and I've shared this with some of the leaders before, feed, fix, and protect. So what we want to do when we're changing things is we certainly want to keep doing what works, and we want to get better at it, so we feed what works. By the same token, a lot of times some of the things we're doing can work better. You know, they're sort of broken, so what do we need to do? We need to fix those things. But the most important part of change, in my mind, is to get very clear on what you have to protect. What is sacred, what defines this culture, what defines who you are. And that's where I want to sort of start the call, because I think for those of you that are new on this call and for those of you that are leaders, you know, I get to talk with the corporate team, maybe more than some of the leadership does, get to work within, and I'm going to tell you that some things that we are about are simply not going to change. They are not up for debate. They are going to protect them like they're a little child. And first and foremost is what our business has always been about. Our business, since we started the Juice Plus era, has been about building a growing customer base. When you shake it all down and you look at our business model, what separated us from everybody else in network marketing is we proved that we could build products that consumers wanted, that were fairly priced, with science behind them, and that they would take that even without being a distributor, even without being compensated to do it. And we just didn't only prove that we could get a growing customer base, but we proved that that could be the largest part of our sales. And I will tell you today, the belief in the importance of that has never been higher. You know, we understand no matter what we do with recruiting, no matter what we do with change, no matter what we're talking about with possible strategies and all this innovation, at the end of the day, we want to make sure that every day our customer base is growing, because this is the greatest way for us to honor the mission of inspiring healthy living in others. We cannot inspire people to healthy living if they are not taking our products and we are not involved in their constant transformation and their health. That's what we do. That's what our mission is about. And this isn't up for debate. I always tell people, if you really understand business cultures, I'm talking about a culture that values relationships, not one that values a sale. A sale is just the first step in the process in the world of the Juice Plus company. So we're going to go back, and at the end of the day, when we're looking at everything, the one thing we're going to pay attention to is there a growing customer base. So I look at the UK movement as an example. Is there a growing customer base? We heard so much about recruiting and excitement and speed. Well, understand this. All that occurs because it was a growing customer base. You know, 2 years ago, they had an ARO base, so a customer base of about 4,500 people. Now that customer base is about 90,000 people. So when you build a strong growing customer base, not only do you get growth, but you get something much more important, and that's called stability. So I'm going to keep coming back to this concept because I hear so much about everything but this. And I think this is the most important thing that we have to understand our business is about. If you have somebody on your team that at the end of the day doesn't have a growing customer base, then I will tell you their business is going backwards and it will have consequences over time. The second thing that I believe they're going to protect, they being the management team, is our unique sort of connection with science. So they learned years ago that we could put Juice Plus up to the test of the best science with the best scientists and prove that it worked. And, you know, 31 studies later, they've done that. And nobody in the world has ever done that. And because of that, it has played a huge role in us being the most sold and researched nutraceutical product in the world. And I will tell you, the science department isn't closed down. This is something where there is lots of activity. You're going to see more studies. You're going to see more science. You're going to continue to see us separate from any possible competitor that comes into the marketplace, because our science proves that our product's right. Now, we also know that the stories do, which I'm going to touch on in a little bit. So we're not looking to abandon science. We might move it around a little bit, but we're not looking to abandon science. And then most important of the three is this is a company that doesn't want to be perceived as a network marketing company. You know, I don't know what the visions are of people on this call relative to network marketing, but I will tell you the visions of the masses about network marketing are really poor. You know, it's sort of an overpromise, underdelivering business, but one that is changing. It is evolving. It is getting a better reputation. It's attracting more people. You know, it does about $150 billion in sales now, and there's over 100 million people involved as distributors around the world in 200-plus countries. So this is a business model that's around, but we didn't want to be the typical network marketing company where you just become, in essence, a distributor buyer's club. We wanted to prove that we could have a product that stood up on its own, right back to that end consumer rule. So we don't want to be like network marketing. We want to start behaving like network marketing. We don't want to start getting published like network marketing. We want to be the Juice Plus company. We want to be what the future of network marketing is going to look like, a product-driven business model. This is an important thing to protect because there's a lot going on sort of behind the scenes with the regulatory environment about this issue. So those are the things that we're going to protect. So as I share that, now let me kind of go into what I'm seeing as the struggle. So as I talk to people since the conference, the first thing they're struggling with is what to do with information. So they hear the calls, they hear all this, they see all this stuff on the stage, and they just don't know what to do. And the second thing they're kind of struggling with is the process of change. You know, how do we really change something? And what we're seeing and what I'm getting is people want an immediate answer. People want a system in place because for so long, our way in the States was to find something that worked and to make it be the way. And for the first time in a long time, what we're doing is allowing innovation. See, we have lots of things that are working right now, and we want to let those play out so that competition creates value and that we all have a better solution once we figure out what we're going to put into systems. So what have we learned? Let's talk about the lessons. Let me go back. So the first thing that we have learned from the UK lesson is the power of rules. And we learned this with Katie with the skinny rules, where we've been over here forever and a day marketing our product with science lectures and health prevention lectures and some of the best doctors in the world talking about the value of our product and the value of the healthy lifestyle. They went a different direction. She put a product out there and put a set of rules around it. And the rules that she put around it, of all things, was a detox program, a liver detox program. But if you followed these rules, an amazing thing would happen. You'd get a result. And the one downside we have with Juice Plus is that most people don't feel prevention. So most people don't feel all that science that's behind the product, even though that exists. Even though they were aware of it initially when they went in, it's sort of out of sight, out of mind. So we learned when you put rules around the products, all of a sudden now, instead of talking about your product, you're talking about results. And it was really sort of an awakening to understanding something about the consumer. And the consumer today, for the most part, doesn't care why something works. They just want to know how. They don't want to go to class. They don't want to sit for an hour and be taught about an educational lecture. They just want somebody to tell them how to get the result they want. And that's what the rules were able to do. They were able to create that. Now, what I will tell you is so great. So what's the first change I've seen in the momentum wave we're in? The first change was we started seeing this process, this lesson, get applied. We started seeing things like the complete transformation. We started seeing things like Transform 30. I would see things like Renee O'Neill's program, and there's so many other variations. And, people ask me, I literally had two people email me today and said, which of these systems do you recommend? And my answer was the one that works best for you, and if you don't find one that works best for you, then create one. Had a girl that came in last week. She's a nutritionist, didn't like any of the systems, wanted to create her own. So I encouraged her to do that. But at the end of the day, regardless of what system you choose or which one you elect to be a part of, what is really important to understand is when we wrap those rules around our products, an amazing thing happens. And I will tell you that I think the initial part of our wave, so in March, we had record sales like we hadn't seen in years and years, and April's going to be better than March. And I believe that the core of that has been the group of people, some of them I know that are on this line, that embraced this lesson and created some systems for everybody to use. And now this kind of thinking has become pretty much the way in the U.S. We're sort of abandoning the concept of just selling a product through science and embracing this concept of putting rules around it so we can talk about results and create stories. So I think that this is something in action. For those of you on the call, figure out which program you want to be and join it or develop your own. The second one was where stories belong in the business process. So for the longest time, we sort of had an attitude that, science is everything and all stories equal testimonials. And what we learned from the UK is that they used tons of stories. It was the foundation of how they showed results. And over time, the culture began, the management team began to understand the power of stories and the power of how they influence people. So we've begun to talk about these stories and where they belong. And what we understand is they belong everywhere. Stories are powerful to influence people to buy a product. Stories are powerful to influence people to become part of our product. I'm sorry, part of our opportunity. Stories are powerful to keep a customer on our product, and stories are powerful to keep people engaged in our culture. So where do stories belong? Everywhere. And one of the sort of development, the leadership development areas that we have to get better at, and this falls under communication, is storytelling. How do we tell stories better and how do we get better at this? And, when we start off, I'm in Juice Plus because, maybe we should just take out the because nobody really cares why. They just want to know the results and we have to begin to do this better. And the UK kids, I call them kids, they're not kids, there's some that are as old as I am now over there. But what they were able to do is they were innately good at using social media to tell stories. And it was the first time that the culture really embraced stories and began to sell the power of stories. And then sort of the third lesson fits hand in hand. Well, now where does science work best? You know, if science defines us, if science is what makes us unique, where do we put science in our business process? And I believe that science needs to come not as a method to drive sales, but as a method to build beliefs. It actually works better after somebody is a distributor. Now, are there exceptions to that rule? Absolutely. There are people that love science, and you have to be able to identify who those people are and get them all the science you need. Gosh, we have so much of it and so many great doctors and DVDs and presentations. But at the end of the day, the masses don't really want to get into that why something works until they're really engaged in this business and they want to strengthen their beliefs and they want to understand more. So I think what you're going to find is that the people that start to do really well and move a little faster begin to sort of not abandon science. This is the last thing we're going to do. Just move it. You know, they're not going to be doing health lectures as much as they're going to be doing different types of meetings. You know, they're not going to try to over-educate people. You're going to start to see what Dr. Jan Roberto did such a great job in Phoenix. You're going to start seeing doctors not only telling about our product, but telling stories. What a great thing that is. Somebody was telling me the other day, I'm trying to remember who it was, I think it might have been Lisa Blaisdell, we were having a talk, and she was telling me about how Dr. Sears did a presentation and brought somebody with them and the story related to this person, and how in all the years she had seen Dr. Sears present, this was the best presentation ever because the story was so powerful. So we have to put stories in the place of where we have science and use science a little differently, and we might end up packaging it differently. You know, you might find that a year from now, you know, our kind of way we do science is more done in like 5-minute clips because small videos are good. Can you imagine if I could take anybody and have all 31 studies done in a 5-minute video, not all, but each 5 minutes for each study, where I could give it to my kids and where they would understand what that study meant and what value it had to us. So with this being the case, it's really important to kind of embrace where science fits in this. The fourth one was, and this is such a huge one for me, this is where call number two, which by the way was the biggest of the four, was about the sales funnel. We finally got a picture of what simplicity looks like in a sales funnel, where all we have seen for years is complexity and more of it. So many different ways, so many things added, so many things involved with launching a distributor and building a team. And we knew that, you know, one of the downsides of complexity is that it doesn't duplicate. So we had to get simple. And what was simple? Here's how simple it was for them. Get somebody to have an experience. It started with the product experience by adding rules to it. And then they've since kind of evolved, and now they do product and business. Once you get a story, tell the world. And so it went back to a simple concept that results need visibility. And instead of using a memory jogger and minimizing that visibility by what you were writing on a sheet of paper, they put it out to social media so the whole world could see it. And they had amazing results by creating visibility around results. And then the last thing they did was they understood what we've always known, the power of events. And they did a really good job creating lots of events, doing multiple events all over the place every day. And these events were what I call the conversion piece. They did a great job of taking people that were interested, that maybe were customers, maybe were not, but turning them into distributors. And if you think about this as a business model, how simple is this? I start somebody with an experience. So I get somebody on a product, and what do I want them to do? Get a result. Once I get a result, what do I begin to do? Tell the world through social media or however you want to tell the world. And then what do I want to do after that? Get them to events. Because if I can get them to events, then I can have them become part of the culture. And then when we go back, what our business plan becomes, instead of a million fast tracks and incentives and launch calls and tapes and this, that, and everything is really simple. Go repeat the process. Go find somebody that you can help to get a result. Teach them how to put a story out and get them to an event. So with this simple sales funnel, we saw unbelievable results, things we never imagined possible. You know, kind of the latest was the girl that made NMD in 90 days. I just saw her on Facebook, and she's like, I think I'm going to do a training on how to get to NMD in 90 days. And I almost put down, don't do it, but because the time you started, it'll be 60 days. And this is the power of a sales funnel. And I will tell you, I've only seen this twice in the 25 years I've been with this company. Once was when Jeff started, when, you know, he went from kind of zero to a couple $100,000 a month in a three-year period, and the company went from $1 million a month in sales to $1 million a day. We are seeing the same kind of a process in the UK, actually much bigger numbers, much more people involved, and with a very different system. But it was the simplicity of Jeff's sales funnel that really made that work, and we have that same simplicity now. So what do I encourage you guys to do? To understand this same sales funnel, start building it, start embracing this simplicity. You know, right now you have so many answers about how to create results and stories. Maybe you need to learn more on how to use social media, you know, how to be a Facebooker or to use Twitter or Instagram and how to do it well, how to communicate on these things. Maybe we've got to evolve a little bit in the way that we're doing events. I know a lot of people are doing that now with the, I think it's the 45-second napkin presentation. But whatever that is, we have to create that simple sales funnel where anybody can do it, because that's what happens with a simple sales funnel. Instead of there having to be so much education and so much involvement from an upline in teaching somebody, the sales funnel creates all this success. You got to remember, when Katie got started, she was moving over 50% of her VFs, they're called SDDs over there, to sales coordinator. We'd never seen anything like that. And now she's, you know, two years plus in, she's 16 wide and has 10 frontline NMD teams. And all this is, certainly there's lots of reasons, but the biggest reason is they build a simple sales funnel. Now, the next lesson is one that I would tell you should be every one of your first steps. So when people say, what do I do now? This is the next lesson. Start with your own transformation. You know, what they found, and it's true about everybody, is if you start getting a result, then you'll be more excited about doing that for other people. So I don't know if you have a plan. I don't know if you have a transformation. I don't know if you're doing anything different right now. But if you're not, this is where you have to start. And what they did to kind of feed this process was they have a ton of the kind of vision groups, you know, vision board meetings, where they basically sit around and dream and talk about all the things they want. And that's a powerful thing to do when you have people that dream a lot and have a lot of thoughts. And these vision boards is playing a huge role in keeping this transformation going and letting them see the possibilities of all this. And what I will tell you I've learned about a transformation, and this is a time element, is the shorter the transformation period, so the quicker I can produce a result, the more effective the transformation is going to be. And probably the greatest example of this outside of the business is look at what's on TV with all the exercise stuff. So originally that started with P90X, a 90-day program. Now I see them pitching. I've literally seen a five-minute-a-day program. So what they realized was if they compress time, if I can get a quicker result, then this is going to play a major role in somebody seeing the value of continuing on our product or maybe joining us in our mission. And then, of course, whatever result we get, we have to have a continuation program. Our goal isn't weight loss. Our goal isn't to create a result. It's to inspire healthy living. We want healthy people, and that means it's a process. But you got to work your transformation. You got to get excited about that again. There's not one of us on this line, me included, that couldn't sit down tonight and write a plan on how my health could be better and how my financial situation could be better. And this is something that we have to embrace. The next lesson, and boy, this goes right back to the sales funnel. I talked about the importance of the sales funnel, but there was another lesson we learned about it, and that's this. that if you ramp up recruiting and you don't have a sales funnel, the net result will be zero. So we went back over time and we looked and we saw periods where we ramped up recruiting, where we got a lot more distributors in, where we would get big, you know, runs and cycles of new customers. And unfortunately, it wouldn't retain itself, and it wouldn't retain itself because we're chasing after acquisitions and people aren't paying attention to the customers like they like, and we're not doing transformations, and you know, we're not keeping people on the product because we're not involved and we don't understand the power of how our influence in a relationship affects somebody staying on a product. So we have to understand, and I know a lot of people left Phoenix. This is probably the scariest thing that happened to me in Phoenix. A lot of people left Phoenix and said, I got the message loud and clear. We need to make it more business opportunity and more recruiting. And I will tell you that if you do that and you do not have a simple sales funnel that creates a growing customer base, your business will go backwards. And we know because we're actually seeing pockets of this. We're seeing teams, we're seeing areas, especially internationally, where we're getting incredible recruiting numbers and we're getting incredible sales numbers. So acquisitions of new customers, you know, the ARs are growing with new people, but sales aren't growing. And the reason is because people are leaving, because we're not understanding the power of having a system to create engagement, a system to build relationships. That has to come before recruiting, before you ramp it up. Or what you're going to do is we're going to start looking like every other network marketing company in the world. We're going to start burning and churning through people. So don't miss the power and the importance of that growing customer base. The final one that I kind of made a note on is we got really clear about the power of visibility. You know, when for years we have sort of preached this concept of a memory jogger and a warm market, and the simple reality is the world has changed. Is there value in a warm market? There always will be. There's always value in the relationships you have. But what we found is it's sort of constrictive. You know, when you limit the possibilities to what you can write on a memory jogger, you limit the possibilities to what can happen in your business. And when we saw the power of social media, when we saw that people could create literally hundreds and hundreds of customers a month simply by posting stories and doing social media right, and then when we looked over in the UK and we said, you know what, it's not a strategy. There are just literally dozens and dozens, if not hundreds and hundreds of different ways people are using social media. So you have to find your strategy. You have to find your way. But make no mistake, social media is like putting gasoline on a fire because it's what creates massive visibility about our business, about our product, and about our culture. So I can tell you, I had a call today with one of the directors of one of the foreign countries, and what she was telling me was an observation she made. And the observation was this: we've never done better than we're doing right now, but everybody that is not engaging in social media is doing nothing. They're not engaged. They're not creating results. They stick to their old thinking. Everybody that is even trying it for the first time, even just getting in the process of learning or taking on, you know, some kind of method or strategy from somebody else, these are the people that are growing. So I encourage you, don't limit yourself to the memory jogger. It might be a part of the tool, but the real visibility is showing the world that you exist. So those are sort of the lessons, some things that I think maybe you can apply at this stage. But by the same token, let me kind of tell you some things that we don't know yet, because this is a work in process. You know, we certainly don't know which customer transformation program is the best. You know, is the Complete Transformation better than the Transform 30? Has Renee O'Neill got it figured out when she can work a customer-only program, not recruiting anybody, and raise her business 50% in literally 4 months? You know, which one of these systems work best? Talk to Kelly Prohl, Courtney O'Donnell today. They're using a webinar approach to how they're doing the business, and they're having amazing success. So I don't know which one's going to work better, but I will tell you, in time we'll know, and in time it's liable to be a combination of things. and then we will begin to develop a more unified approach. So I think the worst thing we could do right now is to jump on a program until we're clear the results it can produce, and we're clear that that is like our maximum effort. Until we get there, I give all the credit in the world to Randy, to Karen, to the other regional directors, that they are allowing people to try things. They're allowing innovation, and we want to encourage this. Now, imagine by the time we get to Memphis, we're going to start having some clarity on this issue. We might start putting some programs together. The second thing that sort of sticks out to me on what do we not know yet, well, we don't know what tools we need to best support the business. If you look at the European business, they have a little bit more of a tool structure. So, you know, they have a 4-minute video by Emily Buckley about Complete that they use all the time. You know, they've got this new 24/7 JP, which is just a great tool. And I think I heard the other day there's already 500,000 hits on the use of that tool. And I know a lot of people in the U.S. are using that tool. We're going to need different tools, and we're going to need to evolve. And I will tell you, as we speak, the company is already in the process of building these new tools. And this is only going to help our business. And, you know, I still believe that the best tool we need is a simple video that sells our culture so people understand who we are and what we're about, and inviting them to join us in the mission to inspire health or just to join in the mission of changing their health. So either from a product or a business standpoint, why we're the right answer. But rest assured, there's going to be more tools coming, and it's going to make a big difference. The third is, and this is kind of a Jay conversation, point of sale. So what's the right price going in? You know, John Holowaty, who is on top of all the UK momentum with Katie and Emma Sneddon, those are the two big lines, his feeling was, I've got to go in with a low-priced product so that I can create an experience, and then after I create the experience, then I can get them to spend more money. Did it work? It's hard to argue with success. By the same token, their demographics are way different than ours. Over here, I look at the programs, and what I'm seeing is much more of a variety. So I'm seeing some systems where the point of sale is relatively high, maybe $140, where they're doing the premium and two shakes a day. I see, and then they kind of downsell from there. So, okay, if you don't want it two shakes, let's do one. If you don't want the premium, let's do the twin pack. And I see nothing wrong with that approach. They're all working. Which one's going to work best, which is right, I don't know. I will tell you that I have always believed that price is a function of value. So you could make your product $10 a month, and if somebody doesn't see $10 worth of value, they will stop taking it. By the same token, I could make that product $200 a month, and if they see huge value, they'll think they're getting the best discount in the world. So when price becomes the objection, what we really have to understand is they're not questioning how much it is. They're questioning that much value. So we've got to start looking at this, and I don't know the answer to this question, and we're going to begin to find this out. I will tell you the U.S. demographics, our customer base tends to be very much on the high end, like the 100,000 and plus income earners. You know, that's who we sort of attract as a customer base. So, you know, our customers don't mind spending a little bit more money because they can certainly afford to spend a little bit more money. So this is a question that we're going to find out. I don't think there's a right and wrong answer. I think it's just going to vary. And then, most important, what we don't know is what event structure is best. And I should add, what event structure is best for our market. So pretty much everybody I talked to after Phoenix decided the UK was the way and their event structure was the way. And I shared what their event structure was. And I will tell you that it's a good event structure. It's very heavy on the opportunity side. But I'm not sure it's the right answer, or should I say the only answer for us. You know, we're a customer-based business. We've built things through education. We don't run a lot of meetings in event halls like they do. We do a lot of things one-on-one, do a lot of things with home health parties. And we might find that there's a better event structure. So, you know, look at somebody like Courtney O'Donnell. She's having huge success with her business, and she's doing all her meetings at the house. And it's almost become like a fun storytelling event. And people want to join. They want to be part of the team. They want to be part of the fun. They want to have the results that they're hearing in stories. And maybe it's going to be that kind of an event. But what you have to be careful with your events is to not have events go too far toward opportunity and recruiting, too far toward what network marketing looks like. Don't think that recruiting 50 people is as important as recruiting one person that'll get 50 customers. We want to have events that fit the nature of our culture, that fit who we are. And just because something works in one area doesn't mean something won't work in another. And events is something where we need innovation, and we're starting to see that. And there's so many different types of events, and I love, you know, somebody asked Randy about it, and, you know, what do we do with a business opportunity? Anything you want to try. And I love that he's allowing this innovation, because we're looking for the answer too over here. We're looking for what the right choice is. So let me kind of close on this, and, you know, hopefully you guys have gotten some value from these lessons and what I would try to apply to them, and certainly where we have lots of questions left. The first is you just got to accept and understand there is no immediate answer. We are in a transformation. This is a process. We are already starting to see the changes. They are going to come more, and they are going to come faster, and I believe this momentum wave is going to pick up. I remember when Katie started, things sort of went slow for about 6 months, and then it started taking fire, and then other people started joining in, and then Emma Sneddon and her team came and made some innovations, and then you get what we saw in Phoenix. So just understand, you're going to have to embrace this process. And what I mean by a process is change is just three things. If you look at the process of change, it's first is awareness, thinking. So we have to look at our thinking. That's what I've been doing with the UK lessons. That's what I've talked about a lot on this call. And we have to challenge our thinking to say, is this the best way? Is this the right thing? Is there a better belief system? Is there a better way of approaching the business process? And awareness is the first stage of change. And I will tell you that I think the awareness level right now is very high. I think a lot of people have new thinking, and they're trying to figure out how to integrate it with old thinking and trying to figure out what to do with it, which brings me into the second part of change, activity. So we can never create change if we don't take knowledge and thinking and do something with it. And this is where we're starting to see everything that's going on. This is where we're starting to see all this innovation and all these cool ideas and all these people working sidelines and sharing. And this is like a really exciting thing. But make no mistake, we are in the integration stage. And when we get into the activity and integration stage, this is where thinking turns into results. This is why we're just coming off of two record months, and this is just the start of this, because our culture has now embraced that thinking and put it into action. And then the third, maybe the most important, is resolve. Change is not easy. You know, Michelle, I opened up the thing. What did she say? Change kind of scares me. You know, it creates fear, and it's that way for a lot of people. And the reason is because at the end of the day, people don't change because they're sort of addicted to their emotional state. They don't have enough pain, and they don't have enough perceived pleasure to make a change. So as you're going through this, what I can promise you is you're going to have problems that you've never had. You're going to have points of frustration, and it's your resolve to know that there's a better day, to know that we are going to see results in the coming months and years that in the U.S. we never even imagined possible. And you have to stay committed to learning. You have to stay committed to this process. And if you do, then everything becomes possible. I will tell you, my opinion, the momentum wave has started. You're at the beginning. I would imagine if I showed you guys the U.K. numbers and I said, how many of you would go sign up knowing 2 months into the momentum wave what was about to happen? Everybody on this call would go do it because it was just absolutely amazing. That's the timing of where you're at here. You're at the beginning of a momentum wave. So the timing to embrace change, the timing to be part of this culture, in my opinion, has never been better. I shared this on another call. I don't know if it was one that I did with this group, but every year I do kickoff calls. And every year I tell people the same thing, that I believe the best is yet to come. this year there was something different. I didn't have a belief that the best was yet to come. I had an expectation. I knew that things were changing, and I knew that it was going to produce results. I didn't think about it. I didn't hope for it. I didn't theoretically get to a point where I could say, here's why the best is yet to come. We know it's coming. It's already in place, and this is the time you really want to roll up your sleeves and learn, because anything becomes possible. And then ultimately, you know, understand that this is a process, and the thing that's going to get your way more than anything is what you already know and do. So much of our old thinking, so much of our old processes, we almost have to begin to erase and challenge and look and embrace a better way. You know, if the memory jogger isn't the best way, what is a better way? If the memory jogger works, how do we make it better? Is the starter guide something we need? You know, these are things that we have to begin to look at and challenge and understand as a group so that we can build a stronger culture. And then most important, if you get nothing else from this call, what I will tell you is embrace simplicity. Listen, at the end of the day, what are we about? We're about changing people's lives. And that means that our products have to be used by people, not just at the beginning, but continuously. And if we go back to that principle of building a bigger customer base, I still believe the biggest mistake we made, and I was a part of this, so I will take as much blame as anybody, is back in 2009 when we talked about the importance of shifting and shifting a little bit away from such a product-heavy culture to a little bit more opportunity. I forgot to say, and we forgot to protect, the one thing we knew, the business process. Back then, the first thing you did, the first rule out of the gates was build a qualifying business. If you don't have a qualifying business with customers, you haven't made it to step one in your business. And I will tell you, after all these years of working the business, with the net result being very little, this is the time to go back to that basic. This is the time to understand the power of qualifying everybody on your team with having a customer base. That is more important than recruiting 50 people that don't have one. And this is why, like, this is what I love about Renee's system, that it's all customer focused. Can you imagine getting your business to grow your pay line 50% without recruiting anybody? Because you're doing a better job building customer relationships. And to do this, you have to embrace that much simplicity. You have to get it down to, at the end of the day, that's what it really comes down to. If I'm doing that, I remember I had a call with Kelly Prohl and one of her distributors. Our call, her name was Amy Horde, and the call was about Amy's business. And Amy had a qualified POB business with very little structure. And she got on the call, and she was almost embarrassed. And she felt horrible that this is what her business looked like. And I remember telling her, she was in tears about it, that, listen, Amy, I'll take 1,000 of you over one recruiter any day, because what you're building will be around forever, it will continue to grow, and it will continue to build stability. So what do I have to say at the end? Welcome to the movement, embrace the change, seek simplicity, apply these lessons, start locking arms with the workers, and you're going to see that things are going to be really different in the coming weeks, months, and years. So I thank you again for having me on the call. I'm excited for you guys to get to hear from Jeff. Nobody can replace Jeff. He's the best. He's one of a kind. And I know he'll do a great job when he gets on the call. So thank you again for having me.